You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Richard Julin. Richard, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks.
Let's talk about what you're working on now. I know Magazine 3 is closed, and I want to talk about that. But to begin with, what are you working on anything this summer in particular?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm preparing a show that has the title Like a Prayer, Stolen from Madonna. We've been working on it for a while. It's an exhibition basically mirroring our times, but trying to focus on hope in a certain way. And it's a selection of works of contemporary artists from our collection, but they're put sort of juxtaposed to these objects that are over 2,000 years old. These are Etruscan votive figures, a type of object or sculpture that one made at the time in hopes of curing this body part. It might be a hand or a breast or a foot or a lot of genitalia, actually. This type of objects that are all made of clay. So it's a mixture of contemporary art and really old objects.
Well, that's a very interesting kind of dialogue between objects that you don't see. And so it's based on this theme, hope. What would be contemporary examples of that?
I think it's 14 artists at this moment. Most of the contemporary art is reflecting, or it's on themes of war or crisis in general, also on personal crisis. We have artists in the show, several Swedish artists actually that you might not be familiar with. Ulf Roloff is one person, Lars Nilsson, but there's also Mona Hatoum, a Lebanese artist that more people might be familiar with than the Swedish artist. Louise Bourgeois is in the exhibition. We have Peter Schoof, who's a Dutch-born artist who lives in the States, and a number of other people.
Well, that sounds really interesting. And their work somehow embodies the idea of hope as well. It's such a broad kind of concept, or is it?
It's a really broad concept. But what we're hoping for in bringing the Etruscan votive figures is to have them as a kind of a trigger of thought in the direction of hope. Let's say. Within a theme that actually is rather dark and gloomy in different ways. So I would say that the contemporary artists, in my view, where I am right now in the thought process, is that just the making, you know, of these art objects within a direction of a certain type of theme that in the case of some of the artists have to do with war, but just making it and portraying it is, in a sense, a direction of hope.
That's true. In Stockholm, though, and correct me if I'm wrong, because it's something that I have trouble understanding, you're putting together this show. This show is of international interest, and there's international artists in this. However, in Stockholm, when you talk about hope or dark issues, isn't there a slightly different local cultural take on that? I was recently interviewing Anne Olofsson, and she was talking about that concept of between the bird and the lilac, this time of year where it's very beautiful, but in some ways very, very melancholy. And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm speaking to this just because she spoke of the people there, natives being, somehow different.
Gloomy?
Gloomy, yeah, for lack of a better word. And is that the case?
Well,
is that part of what's happening in this show, or no?
I haven't. I'm co-curating this show. I really want to mention with my colleague Tessa Brown, who's also a curator at Magazine 3. I wouldn't say that we've at all thought of that. It might probably get into. I mean, I guess you're talking about ideas of people living sort of more in the northern hemisphere being, you know, I mean, having not only the weather but also how the sun moves around Earth and so forth, influencing the way we feel and being more gloomy in the winter. Certainly, that's something that probably happens, but it's not what we've thought about in relation to this show. It's not really about moods in that sense, but rather crisis in a more general sense and how people have dealt with it through art or just as humans. The fact that, I mean, the old objects in the show are, I mean, we don't know that much about the Etruscans because they were basically stomped out by the Romans, but we do have these objects left, and you can tell that they probably tried to do something and create objects that made clear to the gods or whoever they wanted to pray to that they needed help in some way.
Well, that's
so
interesting.
I mean,
is true, right. We make objects. I'm sorry to interrupt, but right, we make objects in crisis. Mm-hmm. But go on, you were saying, but what I'm picking up in this kind of local association is...
Well, you know, what you're picking up, it could be, I mean, if I try to take a couple of steps back and see it from perhaps your viewpoint, for instance, from the United States, it could be that we, as Swedes, that we pick this theme just because we do have a tendency to get a bit gloomy at times. I don't know. But, you know, how could you not in these times? I think it is my view. I mean, when we decided that we'd make an exhibition and look at our collection again, the collection of Magazine 3, and to see, you know, we're fairly tired of making thematic shows in general, but we just made it as an exercise, and it was clear that the sort of the glasses we had on are so colored by how the world looks today. So we had to start from that viewpoint, and whether that is something in general in the world right now or what you're picking up on or wondering about through the conversation you had with this Swedish artist, I don't know. You know, it could, of course, be that we do have a tendency to try to focus on those type of issues here up in the north. Who knows?
Well, it seems there's a few layers. I mean, of course, at this time in the world, you know, with global warming and so many other things, it is a time when of crisis, right? We need hope of some kind, but also, as you talk about it in comparing objects, it seems evident that art itself is this sign of life, of hope. We make things, you know, for some reason to look at or to have, and that in itself is an act almost of defiance, perhaps, or of saying, you know,
I think so. I think there are a lot of this is kind of like just a starting point, a seed in the exhibition that we're putting on, and it's actually hasn't opened yet, so we're in the middle of it. And I do tend today to think of proposals from a curator in an exhibition like this, where it's not a solo show by an artist, as something that's just a trigger point for people to come and start looking, feeling, seeing for themselves. So really, I mean, in a sense, to talk about the crisis in the world and to look for hope is, of course, very important, and at the same time, it might sound incredibly banal. I mean, in this case, I think it's kind of a starting point for this show. We've also... very deliberately given it a kind of a light title despite these times and so forth, Like a Prayer. But it's just to spark something that we don't know where it might lead. So at present, we're discussing this theme with all of the artists in the show, or those who've you know, been willing to enter into dialogue with us. And of course, all kinds of things pop up as follow-up themes, and that's what we'll explore while the show is open. And it's actually going to be open all year, so it'll give us plenty of opportunity to look historically, to look at specific angles, just the body in itself, as these Etruscan votive figures are all body parts. I mean, there are all kinds of directions that we could look into as time goes on, and so the exhibition in itself is kind of just a starting point for something.
Well, it makes it you know, I kind of like the title a lot because it has a double meaning. Like a prayer at one level is kind of banal, as you were saying, but on another level, it seems to me that that's what all artwork is, including these primitive works or ancient works. You know, artists make work and put it out into the world, and in a sense, it is like a prayer. You know, we hope that this object or this artwork, is the way I see it, you know, will have some impact somehow, some way that, you know, someone will smile or someone will change how they look. But they are, in a sense, all almost prayers, as meaningful as a prayer can be, right? And also perhaps as useless as a prayer can be. But nevertheless, a prayer seems apt as a description of almost art's mission.
Yeah, and there are several artists in the show where also, where the act of making art to them is kind of a meditation. So that's another word. You know, if it's not a prayer with a religious connotation, there might be just a meditation, just a repetitive type of movement that creates thought, which then leads you to perhaps even choreography. And there are all these words that we hope will start popping up and that we can bring into this type of thought process that we then can have going on for a while. So, yeah, because your initial question was that what have we been doing this summer? And that's it's in the middle. You know how it is when you're in the middle of a thought process. It's we try to hang on to it as much as possible without having it departmentalized yet. It's not, you know, laid out. We're still in that looking for different type of keywords and so forth. So from prayer to meditation to, as you said, perhaps choreography and, you know, survival through movement, what have you, which then might bring you back to all these refugees that we're discussing a lot right now in Europe, you know?
Right. So that show will run for a full year. It begins in the fall, in September, it runs for a year?
It does, yeah. So, yeah, but then we have other shows coming up in. That's actually something I'm working on parallelly that I haven't brought up, which is a solo show by a really excellent Swedish artist, Kristin Ödlund.
Oh, great.
That comes up in February.
So let's go back a little bit. I mean, I wouldn't mind talking about that artist as well, but let's go back a little bit. How did you get involved in the arts? And you could go as far back as university or a child, but what got you involved with the arts?
I trained as an industrial designer, so in that case, in that sense, I'm in a sense perhaps an unusual art curator. But I was always through my teams where I'm from Sweden, but I grew up in Germany, and in the Rhine area, so I was very close to Cologne, which was and still is a really important contemporary art center. So I was lucky enough to be able to see a lot of art and contemporary art when I was that age. And while I was studying industrial design, I was kind of a sad industrial designer to be. I resented this idea of being one of the people who bring all these new objects into the world. So during that time, I actually saw an exhibition in a museum in Bonn in Germany which centered around Louis Buñuel, the Spanish film director. And it just hit me like a big hammer, you know, like a big cartoon hammer over the head that I could have made this exhibition with the skills I started to learn as an industrial designer and my really big interest in the arts, I realized that exhibition making was actually something that people did. And I never looked back from that day, basically. So that Louis Buñuel show triggered something in me, and then I just really wanted to make exhibitions. And as soon as I could finish school, because I did finish this school that I went to in France, actually. I studied there for 5 years to become this industrial designer. Then I moved back to Sweden, which was where I was born initially, and I just worked toward becoming a curator via an internship at the Museum of Modern Art there that went on longer than it should, and then I got the possibility of working on Alexander Calder show in that museum as sort of a freelance, and then it just rolled from there. And eventually, now 15 years ago, I got offered the possibility of being a curator at Magazine 3, which was at the time quite a small venture with no curators, but three people working there. And together with our director, David Newman, we've kind of developed this place in 15 years further to still modest operation, but we're 14 people and building this collection and really centering around making new artwork with artists, inviting artists, which is basically what I've been focusing most on these 15 years, inviting artists like I mentioned Mona Hatoum before, or Andrea Zittel, or Tino Segal, all kinds of people to come to Stockholm, in many cases spend time in creating new pieces and then creating exhibitions around them.
So that's a very exciting I'm sorry, go on.
No, it's just a condensed version of how I ended up where I am at the moment professionally.
I like that. No, that's just what I wanted to hear. So when you arrived at Magazine 3, what year was that and what was happening there? Because between the time you arrived and now, the staff has more than doubled and it's grown quite a bit, hasn't it?
I started in 99 and our founding director had run the place for 12 years. There was, I think, three people during those years and it was two shows a year. And I guess when I started the decision, we started moving towards being more of an institution, I guess. And we started defining more the fact that we were about the commissions. If the commission is not perhaps the exact right word, but in a sense, it's being close to the artists and inviting them, starting long-term discussions to create new artwork. I mean, we're entirely privately funded, which at the time was quite unusual in Sweden. That has changed with time for good and bad. But we've formulated our own, what we want to do ourselves. So, yeah, that's basically what's happened these 15 years. We've gone through different waves of looking at how we can basically support the arts.
That's wonderful. And I mean, as I was reading about, you know, Mr. Newman, I believe, who was writing about it, was saying that it was Magazine 3 was initially based on a kind of New York, U.S. model, which I didn't understand that focus exactly, but is that the case, that it was modeled after something like PS1 MoMA in New York? Is it that type of thing? And if so, what does that mean exactly?
I guess David should answer that, but then again, I know it so well since I've been working with him for such a long time. Basically, the big inspiration has been the Dia Art Center. That's what we've discussed a lot, and that's David lived in New York for many, many years. I mean, he's been back in Sweden now for 20 years, but he ran a gallery in New York, and he knows that art scene incredibly well. I mean, at the end of the 70s, he moved there. So I know that Dia was sort of a model for something that didn't exist in Sweden at all. And just the feeling, you know, of going to the Earth Room and ringing that bell and being, in a sense, this kind of secretive place that where you enter and it's all about the arts once you get there was, I think, kind of a leading light for how Magazine Clue was created in the beginning. I like to think that we developed that in our own way after that, but that for sure was a huge inspiration.
Well, it sounds like, yeah, much did develop in your own way, and especially as the staff increases and more shows are coming up. Maybe in closing, I hope some of the listeners of the show, because it is shared around the world, will come see the show in the fall. But you also mentioned a solo show coming up. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Christine Ödlund, she's a Swedish artist who works in a variety of media, but basically, I mean, she's a composer of electroacoustic music, so she has a huge knowledge of sound in different ways, but also, I mean, makes moving images and draws, and she has been looking a lot at how plants communicate these last few years, and has been focusing on different types of plants and developing different thoughts around communication beyond words, I would say. And she moves, it's not only about plants, but it's more about things we might not think exist in our world, but might be there, and communicates things that communicate with us in ways that are beyond our language. So we're going to basically make her own first big solo show where there will be some larger sculptures that contain plants of different sorts, but also show some of her earlier movies and investigations that are now at this time underway about light and color in different ways. So in fact, it's really up in the air right now. But I know she's working really hard in her studio on this show, and we're really, really looking forward to it.
That sounds fascinating, and, you know, a kind of wonderful stretch of the mind, you know, academically and aesthetically, this idea also of communicating with things like plants or objects or the non-visible world. I mean, as I understand what you're saying, it's also something that's similar, perhaps, to this group show. It's humanistic. It's beyond form and object and what's happening right now in the art world. There's a and just correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like there's a very much a humanistic touch to that, a sense of how that solo show and even this group show, how art is or can be something much beyond the decorative, that it's really an integral part of our lives and how we think and feel and learn, perhaps.
I just think, actually, it's just really important that you, if you can, that you can support and look and try to develop art and exhibitions that are beyond the commercial art world, which is in a very specific state at this moment, I think, without getting too deep into that. I think the commercialization of the arts at present is very strong, and I think an institution like ours, if we can look beyond that and even thematically or in the choice of artists, try not to be a total part of that commercial system, I think that's an opportunity to grasp.
I think so, too, and that makes sense to me, even comparing it with a DIA model, you know, a notion of art, perhaps even for, you know, its own sake, so to speak, but as a way to kind of counteract what's happening with the market, which, as you're saying, is very strong, seems to also be something that is part of the curatorial mission, which I think, yeah, is very important, not just for Stockholm and Swedes, but for the international art world.
I think so too. Not as a total opposition, but just as a force to remind people of the arts themselves, and that it's not everything is for sale.
I like that, Richard. Thanks so much for talking with me today. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, nice talking to you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.